Hello and welcome to Untold. We are back today in a very exciting setting. I've been here a couple of times and I absolutely love this office, and Kitty will come on and introduce guests in a minute. But as you know, at Untold, we're here to go behind the scenes and find out the realities, sometimes the struggles, the tough times, but also the good bits in running, leading food and drink businesses. So without further ado, Kitty, how are you doing?
Good, thanks, Harry. How are you? All good?
Very good.
Good. So as Harry said, we're in a bit of a different location today. It's actually my home turf, the office, Fruit Towers. And the reason being that we're here isn't just because Harry's trying to get a job, but we're actually here because I'm really, really excited to be interviewing our UK and I MD, Sam Akinlui, who is here with us today. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me. Yep. I only had to walk upstairs to do this one. It's really convenient.
Yeah, better than Sam.
Yeah. It's so good. For those of you that haven't been to the Innocent HQ, it is amazing. I came here a few weeks ago. I'm sort of kind of a local now. came a few weeks ago and just walked in and was like, everything you read and hear about Innocent, it's amazing how that culture, sort of as you've grown, has been kept alive, right? Because you literally walk through and it's like, wow, I want to work here. Like, it's the coolest place.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad at all. Amazing. So just to kick off, Sam, if you wouldn't mind just telling the listeners a little bit about yourself in a couple of minutes as an introduction to who is Sam.
Yeah, so a couple of minutes. I guess the quickest way of doing it, most relevant to this conversation, and we might get into it in other parts of the conversation. I guess professionally, I've been in the industry for about 20 years. Even though I studied banking for some silly reason, I ended up in Croydon working at Nestle. So I was a direct entry. I was a national account exec on Morrison's Safeway at the time, before merger, so back in the day. I then went into sales jobs after uni, then strategy jobs. I was there for about 7 or 8 years, met my wife there. She's still there all this time on. I then went to General Mills, where I looked after Haagen-Dazs and Betty Crocker and Joss Roll, sort of commercially.
Yeah.
Then I tried to escape the industry, and I've tried to do that a couple of times. So I went to work for a tech startup for 6 months, thinking, you get paid, it's a startup, I'll get paid soon, and I'll make loads of money. And Mel was pregnant at the time, and long story short, my daughter was 2 weeks old when I started at Mars, so wow. I sort of cut it really fine.
Yeah.
And I was at Mars for 5 years, and I was used to head up strategy, so I was the commercial strategy director on Mars, and then the sales director on Mars.
Oh, amazing.
And then I tried to escape the industry again for 4 years and set up a non-profit and started helping challenger brands and getting to know the whole world of startups, which is unbelievable, just compared to obviously my time at Nestle and places like that. I'm sure we'll come on to talk about that. And then I now do 2 jobs. I run a startup and I also run Innocent Drinks in the UK and in the UK and Ireland. So that's almost like the CV bit. I was born in Nigeria, moved over here with my when I was 6, and I've got 2 younger brothers, I've got a wife and 2 kids, and I tried to do that in a nutshell.
That was good.
It's funny, but when you do the nutshell one, you only really go professionally, but then I just think, particularly with a podcast like this, you want to get into the what I call the non-shiny bits, which I'm sure we'll get into, because what this is all about.
100%, man, 100%. I think it's I think it's amazing doing, you've got sort of multiple different hats from a working perspective, but then also multiple different hats from a personal perspective as well. Yeah. Right? Sounds like you're a busy man. Like.
Yeah, it's a bit busy.
Yeah. That's good though, that's what we all live for, right? So I guess just kind of moving that on, there's so much to unpick from that, but I guess the kind of really interesting place to start might be about sort of when you obviously joined in the corporate world and how that sort of came about and how your career kind of moved on, and then obviously jumping out into the tech startup and kind of what that felt like and how that story progressed.
Yeah. Well, Nestle is the biggest food company in the world, and I think joining there straight from uni, it's easy in a sense because you know exactly what your job is. You fit in perfectly into this cube, and that is your role.
Yeah.
And then you're really clear about what the next roles are. And there's so many, it's so big. There's quite a lot of opportunity as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that I always say that my time at Nestle taught me how a business runs if it was a Swiss watch. Like, if it was...
Yeah.
Everything was working. You had all the money in the world.
Yeah.
The word cash flow was never a conversation. Which is so miles away from anyone in the startup space. And you learn everything the real classic way.
Yeah.
On reflection, actually, you realise you're on exactly the same course that literally thousands of other people are on,
yeah.
whether it's a sales or a negotiation course and things like that. So that was, I feel like I learned how to do things in a certain way, but do it in the perfect, maybe arguably quite sterile in a sense way. And it's very safe.
Yeah.
It feels very safe, as long as obviously you're performing, all those kind of things. The tech startup was the complete opposite. It was there was three of us sitting in a row in called it Silicon Roundabout, but you know the bit in Old Street.
Calls
it Silicon Roundabout, the Google campus, and we just sit there and surrounded by these serial entrepreneurs. And some of them, you look at, you think, I don't know if you actually want to make it. You just like this life.
Yeah.
Of like starting stuff and
enjoying the roundabout.
Just enjoying that bit. But what I learned about that is you just have to do everything. Everything. No one's going to... There's not a department you call. There's not an IT team you call.
Yeah.
And you're not just... With brands that have been established for so long, everyone knows what it is before you walk in. Like the brand walks in before you.
Yeah.
Every time I picked the phone up before I worked at Nestle, I knew the buyer would pick up because I was the most important person in their category.
Yeah.
And then you go to this world, particularly in tech startups, where I'm having to explain you this new concept that you've never heard before. You don't know me. You don't know the concept. You've never heard of our business before. And I've got to work out a way to have a conversation with you enough for you to just have the second conversation. That's you get to be quite humble. You have to think much more creatively. Because you're not part of the establishment. And again, moving into the challenger brand world, when you're... Yes, you are a food and drink brand, but you're not part of the establishment.
Right.
You've got to make space for yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing I learned is it's the hustle.
Yeah,
100%. That wasn't required when I was working somewhere like Nestle.
Yeah, amazing. And I think I can massively resonate with that when talking about not being able to pick up the phone to an IT department. I remember one time I sent an email and I was chasing it. I was like, I haven't had an email from you. And I was like, this is really strange because I haven't had any emails for a couple of days. And then I was like, my G Suite, my Google Mail had been cancelled because I hadn't paid the bill. Yeah, and I was like, oh, I've done that.
Auto-renewed.
And
when someone joins, you think, ooh, should I give them a 1 month account? You give them the 1 month account, and then they say, Sam, I can't send you an email.
Auto-renewed.
1 second.
I promise that wasn't delivered.
That's really interesting. I think also, I guess, and you touched on it a bit, but I think that particularly within food and drink as well, that with the acceleration of startups that have come into play probably in the past 5 years, that when, you know, ad hoc, for example, if I talk about Harry, say, you know, I know Harry is a fan of the Zavaris, and people think, oh, okay, cool, food and drink startup, that's a really cool thing to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, similarly to you and that tech startup, when did you reach that point when you were still working on the tech thing that you thought, this isn't kind of going in the right way, or the risk is too big, given personally what was going on as well? When did that all kind of click together? Because it's very exciting, isn't it, when you start doing it, and then you're like... I don't know, you're going to reach a bit of a decision point.
It's a really good question. And mine came in, you know, when you're just looking at brands, we were talking just before the podcast started about how amazing everything looks and sounds, like when you introduce yourself. There's so many one-man bands in startups that will say "we" a lot. So when we started this, I'm like, hang on a minute, how many people in the business? Just me. So why are you saying "we"? And that's just, but that happens all the time because you're trying to be bigger than you are. And I remember working at this tech startup and speaking to the two founders and helping them out and getting so excited. I get really excited about possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
So getting really excited about it. And then I was like, right, I'm in. I'm on board. I've been helping you enough to know that there's something there. And my confidence started to wane when I realised their confidence wasn't as high as I thought it was.
Right.
And they were the ones behind the tech. They were the ones that had seen, like, they're under the bonnet looking at everything, and I'm kind of the salesperson, the strategy person, trying to turn it into a proposition.
Mm-hmm.
But when they started saying things like, maybe other people can do it, or maybe this, that started to rub off a bit on me.
Right.
So I think that was the start of me thinking, maybe it's not as special
mm-hmm.
as it was. So you do drink your own Kool-Aid. And but I think that's in big companies as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're not always truly realistic about the brand or the product. We're just always in our own heads. So that's the thing, is you have to be really pragmatic and look at it, and also be quite honest with the right people about what's under the bonnet. You know, what are the things that keep you up at night, is what I often ask startups, because there's 3 million things that will keep you up at night.
Yeah.
And it's not just how many Instagram followers you've got, which it tends to be currency in this whole space.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, I guess, looking back on that and the conversations that maybe you had at the time, do you have any sort of, not regrets, but just do you think you left and had those conversations at the right time? Or do you think actually, I don't know, could I have given it a little bit more? Or
yeah.
I guess I completely understand what you're saying about the confidence thing, because especially when it's not your thing either. Were you, do you feel comfortable with that decision, like, with retrospect?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I look back at that 6 months and I think, what did I learn? Well, I learned the really valuable bit of making sure you're really clear on everyone's motivations and everyone's level of belief, making sure that, you know, you sign a contract. I'm not saying we didn't sign a bad contract, but you know what you're getting yourself into.
Mm-hmm.
I also was just able to escape the consumer goods industry and look up and out. We don't often get a chance to do that and understand how other businesses work, and traveled a little bit. Yeah, granted, I had to pay my own flight to San Francisco. And it was so funny. I was in this expo in Silicon Valley on my own, with one of those, you know, those banner things that you just put up. Just trying to sell this tech. Among loads of other people trying to sell tech. And it's just interesting to see how other people lived and how they sold stuff and how they, you know, faked it before they made it. And so I absolutely no regrets. I'm not a tech guy, but I think it was a really important experience for me, because it meant that I didn't just stay part of the corporate world and establishment. I had a really extreme look at what a startup was in an industry that I had no familiarity with. So yeah, I don't regret it at all.
Amazing. It's a really interesting point, actually, in terms of, like, taking yourself outside of the norm, and then the lessons that you must have learned there that you now utilise in your daily practice that you probably wouldn't have done had you not had that experience as well. Like, it's really interesting. You see brands out there that kind of deliberately brief design agencies to not go after their category, because that's what the norm would be, and actually, how do you stand out in a category that's full of crisps or drinks or whatever? Like, it's the inspiration is probably going to come from a beer or from a burger rather than another version of a pop chip or another version of a soft drink. Cool, man, amazing, and like, there's so much that I think we want to sort of explore. So it'd be great to sort of, I know Kitty was telling me before that you've done a little bit of work with Young Foodies and also your own charity as well. So obviously there's huge amounts there. But I guess if we sort of start on the Young Foodies element and kind of move into Salt as well, what's your sort of was your involvement with Young Foodies? Are you still involved a little bit?
Yeah, love them, and I am. So Young Foodies are 5 years old. We had it was called a Believers Banquet last week that I attended. And it was started by Thea Alexander.
Mm-hmm.
And I met Thea and, at the time, co-founder Chris, 6 months in, when it was literally two of them, again, in Old Street, near that Silicon
Valley.
Yeah.
Here we go again.
I've just made that connection in my head. Thought that happened. And, you know, I just left Mars and I was just trying to find, just meet people and just understand whether I could be useful to them. So, yeah, I've basically been almost since the start, and I was advising them relatively formally, and we were just thinking about this idea of, if all the challenger brands came together at the time, there were probably, if you bring them all together, 100 million in turnover, but growing around 70% year on year.
Yeah.
So it's this idea of, when you come together at the right time, there is scale in numbers, and there are economies of scale, and we started thinking about logistics, or basically everything that's not to do with sales and marketing directly for the brand. Anything else in the P&L, you could consolidate. So therefore, you get those economies of scale. Mm. I just think it's just a great idea. Really bright people, and it's a really clear mission. So I helped them with a few specific things.
Yeah.
And then just was also there, you know, having catch-ups, one-to-ones with them. I'm a coach, qualified coach.
Amazing.
So I was doing that for a few years, and that was really helpful. But yeah, I'm still linked in with them and talking to Alex, who's there now, and Thea. But what it also gave me is loads of exposure to these brands. Mm-hmm. So meeting and, you know, Ed from Candy Kittens, for example, and spending loads more time with people like him and meeting quite a few brands and just sitting with them and then becoming an advisor for a couple of them.
Amazing.
So like Well and Truly, so Sara Maria there, I was helping for a year or so and ended up just chairing their board of advisors. And so you're just around these people and just understanding how different and the different challenges there are. Not the Instagram version,
the actual
version. So that's been my involvement. Amazing, with man. And I'm still in contact with so many of the challenger brands now, whether it's just phone calls or I don't see them as often as I used to, but I have a real respect for anyone who starts anything up. If you're a big company, I would say, if you're the really big ones, I said my job was just to like hold market share or grow market share or grow 2-3% a year.
Yeah.
And you could basically do that by maybe even putting your prices up, not even selling any more volume. But in this world, you're really fighting hard for space, and you're really fighting hard for that. So that's something I really respect, people that can take something from zero to 50 grand, let alone 5 million. Taking something from zero to something is much harder than most people do in big organizations without any resource. I've got a real respect for that.
Amazing. And what I think is amazing as well is you being able to go in with your experience and help these guys and be like, actually at the different stages they need, it's different horses for different courses, right?
But you can't pretend, but you can't be arrogant enough to think just because you've worked in a big company you can come in and help at all.
Yeah.
And I think there tends to be something that, just because I've done, I don't want to be disparaging, Tesco at a corporate, I've been a Tesco account manager at a corporate, of course I can go and grow that business. It's a completely different, you talked about yourself, like carrying the bag and trying to just drive trial and penetration and make some space for yourself. It's completely different, it's so much harder.
It's amazing. And then sort of moving on from Young Foodies, I love Young Foodies. We've had Thea on the podcast.
Yes.
And actually, Ellie
did
work experience. So she was probably there within those first six months.
My sister was there. I can't remember how long she actually did it for, but it was right at the beginning. It's probably a similar time when she was probably mucking around, like doing every jack of all trades, trying to help out where she could.
For listeners that don't know, Kitty is my sister-in-law, and it's quite a funny one, man, because Kitty's in, obviously works Innocent.
Mm.
I'm in food and drink, and then my brother works at Itsu on the grocery side.
Right.
And then Kitty's sister, Ellie, used to work at Young Foodies. So, like, I think other family members get pretty pissed off at dinner times where it's just talking shop the whole time.
But that's really interesting, because I often talk about the fact that no one ever plans to be in this industry.
Mm.
Like, if you choose to go to uni, very few people are thinking, I want to get this degree so I can go work in consumer goods.
Yeah.
So you kind of end up here and you think, wow, this is like the best kept secret.
You kind of don't realise it's an actual job, thing. Do you?
It's an actual thing.
But my sister said to me and said that.
It's the biggest industry in the UK.
Yeah.
Like when you add the retail side to the supplier side, that whole thing, and you know, from the agriculture all the way through, it is the biggest industry, but no one ever thinks about it.
It's the coolest industry as well, isn't it? There aren't many industries out there where you can kind of pick up the phone to a different brand to ask about a question around a supermarket, but it's not competing because it's a different category. And that's what's amazing about Young Foodies. Yeah. It's that kind of arm around the... I don't know why I'm pretending to a market.
But for the purposes of everyone to come
past. Sorry, it's not great.
I'm hugging the food and drink industry.
Yeah, it is that, though. It's that culture. I think, also, just coming on to, I guess, I'm trying to work out how we talk about salt within all of this, but kind of where the idea of Young Foodies and how you were there at the beginning and you saw the inception of that happen, was there any part of that that resonated into salt forming, or was that kind of at the same time, or was that before?
No, I mean, because I was, obviously, Fear came up with the idea with Chris, and again, it was just me going in and saying, actually, how can I help? And I just really like them as people. I think they're both fantastic individuals. Salt was quite different. Salt and the non-profit Salt came after George Floyd. So George Floyd happened almost exactly 2 years ago, so May 2020. And my personal response was to write a blog that was pretty raw, send it out to the world, and I thought, you know, everyone was feeling, a lot of people were feeling raw at the time.
Yeah.
And I got a response from someone called Jojo. She heads up Northern Europe for Kraft Heinz, someone I've known but increasingly well. And she basically said, and she was right, she went, I want more, I'd love to have more diversity or black people in Kraft Heinz, but no one ever applies. And she was completely right, because I'd been in the industry by that time, 16, 17 years, and I don't think I'd ever interviewed a single black person for a job.
Over 17 years?
Yeah. Wow. And I know this industry isn't like racist. Yes, I've had some moments in certain companies that you think, maybe that was a bit... You know, when you look back, you think, well, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have stood for that. But in the main, there was a real challenge with diversity in the industry. So we just simply said, let's just run an event and let's see if I can find... I took on myself to try and find 50 CVs and then get these young people who were thinking, COVID, exams, how am I ever going to get a job? I was just thinking, let's get 50 CVs and we can run an event and we'll just introduce them to this company.
Mm.
And 10 days later, I had like 180 CVs.
Wow.
So I thought, oh, it's got to be a bit bigger than Kraft Heinz. So I actually got Nick, who's now my boss, and someone I've been in contact with over the years, and Nick and I get on. We've always got on sort of intermittently outside work. I said, Nick, would you mind coming to talk as well? And then I got the CEO of Ocado, Mel, and just say three non-competing, a massive company, a big company like ours that has like more aspirations to grow, and then a retailer with a CEO who's just the most amazing character, Mel Smith. I mean, she's fantastic, and from an underrepresented background as well. She's Maori, and we just ran this event, and I had to write something because there's no deck that exists that just talks about the industry in a really compelling way. So I had to ask my wife, who works in, I said, can you help me out here? Because there's nothing, like, how do we talk about the industry?
Yeah.
And it was like, all right, it's 180 billion in the UK. It's growing at 5% a year. You've got X amount of different jobs and industries within the industry, law, sales. So I thought, wow, this is quite a cool thing to tell someone they don't know. So we ran the first one. It went well. And then I thought, we can't stop now. Otherwise, it will be as gimmicky as, you know, what Blackout Tuesday was when George Floyd happened. So we just ran it every 2 weeks for the summer.
Oh, so that often, was it?
Yeah, it was every 2 or 3 weeks for the summer, and we had the likes of Red Bull, Diageo, I'm going to miss brands now, Oatly, all of them just coming, and then some young foodies. So young foodies spoke, and I had, you know, the Little Moons guy, Howard from Little Moons, who I know a little bit. Yeah. So just letting people know the big companies and the smaller companies, and as a result, young people started thinking, oh, maybe I should apply.
Yeah.
So that's how it all started. And we then set up a mentoring program. So we matched almost 100 leaders. So Nick was a mentor. You had the CEO of Nestle that was mentoring a young black person. And what was really special about that was it's just two people that would never, ever speak.
No. Yeah.
And that was the special bit. And they build a relationship over 3 months. Most of them are still in contact now. And that really helps. Obviously, both is as important for the leader whose eyes are open to difference.
Yeah.
And then the young person has got a got a mentor, and what you find with so many things like this is just not having someone you can speak to. Like, you guys could speak around a dinner table around it. They don't know what the industry is, and they just need a senior, a relatively senior person. So that happened. And then two other things really quickly. Gareth, my co-founder, and I started to get really worried that we're going to get young black people to join, and then the industry will just be so alien. And so many of us, like me, probably has to adjust myself to fit into the industry. We felt a real responsibility to talk to leaders about being actually open to difference and make sure they don't assimilate, just make sure they can be themselves. So we run, that's what Gareth runs, and we run together. And then finally, this guy called Tamoy calls me up with all this going on, and he was a bus scheduler and bus driver from Tooting, and he went, Sam, you don't know me, but I've seen the stuff you're doing on LinkedIn. I've got this product. Can you help me? I was like, I'm sorry, I have got no time.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at your deck. And he was struggling with his deck, and I looked at his artwork, and he did all his artwork on PowerPoint himself.
Wow.
Okay.
And then as you started to speak to him, he said, yeah, I've opened 50 or 60 off licenses just in South London on my own in my spare time. And by the way, my lime flavoured drink came second in the World Premix Championships. And this, there's a danger that someone like this, this driven, this much grit, their product will never see the light of day, because you know how, I'm looking at you, Harry, you know how hard it is, how much money the network, just to get something off the ground.
Yeah.
So that's where AdSort came from. So I was sort of, I had a friend called Lucy who was head of innovation at Nestle Beverages, and so, and I said, can you write me a stage gate process? So, and a stage gate process for everyone is, it's a typical innovation process.
Yeah.
But then I went to speak to retailers and did a bit of research, and of the thousands of brands you can find in a typical retailer, turns out two or three are black owned. So if the UK population of black people is say 2.5 or best 3%, out of thousands of brands, two or three black owned just says that we've got to do something.
Yeah.
And the retailers were amazing. So we set this up and we thought it might not work, but we just got to just keep trying to help people. And long story short, Tamoy got investment from ZX Ventures.
Wow.
Amazing.
December last year. He's now quit his job and he's a full-time entrepreneur with the backing of, you know, AB InBev, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've got more and more examples. It's not easy, so it's not linear.
No.
I wish it was linear. But not everyone's going to make it, but we're trying to make it possible for people. So that's all.
Amazing. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, and it's so, yeah, it's really important, because you've got to work hard now if you're going to see the change 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years down the line.
Yeah.
Mm. Whether it's more people in the industry, in the senior levels in the industry, or more brands on shelf, because it's hard. And for any challenger, any colour, it's really hard.
So, that's what an amazing story, man. I mean, it's class. It's really, really inspirational. And I think it goes to show, doesn't it? Exactly what you're doing. It's like friends sort of moving in for me working at Callers and Press now have a network where it's like, if there's something that's going wrong, you pick up the phone and you find out within like 20 seconds.
Yeah.
But if you don't have that network, that's going to take you 6 months to try and work out how to do it. And it's like, amazing, man. That's wicked. And kind of where do you see that growth? Is it just sort of more of the same stuff and just sort of on a bigger scale?
I think with salt, the idea of salt, like the like the ingredient, it's invisible.
I was going to say, with the name, where does that, because it's P-S-A-L-T, P-S-A-L-T, right?
Yeah.
So where does that come from?
There's a few stories,
okay.
But I think the most, salt is, as an ingredient, salt is something that enhances things that are already good. So it's this idea of, we just want to make good things better.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put salt on a bad meal, right? You're not going to make it any nicer.
Yeah.
And I thought there's a really nice description of how I like to work. And how Gareth and likes to work. And then we put a silent P for a couple of reasons. It's like a nod to things like, well, first of all, it's hard to get salt on a web, salt.com. that wasn't the primary reason. But I really like this idea of things like the Psalms and when I looked back retrospectively, a lot of, if you have P at the start of a name, it tends to do with the things like psychology, so changing your mindset. Mm. So that's where salt
I
came
love
from.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted
no,
you.
Sorry. I can't remember. yeah, I've lost my chain of thought. But that's what salt does.
Yeah.
I remember now what we were saying. Where do we want to go with it? Well, I always think I'm not sure if we've helped the person we were supposed to help,
mm-hmm.
or maybe it's the conversation we have tomorrow.
Yeah. Amazing.
So
amazing.
You just don't know, because all we're here to do is help people, and we're in the room. Like, I mean, I've got the privilege of being, you know, a senior person within the industry, so
yeah.
I can talk to my peers and say things have to change.
Yeah.
And so what am I actually doing with that other than serving my own purposes?
Yeah, yeah.
There are other people who are like-minded in industries that, or companies that are kind of doing the same thing. So I'm trying to work out, how do we just make that all happen together?
Yeah.
What role does SALT play in creating opportunities for underrepresented groups? And we want to go beyond Black, but there's quite a lot of work to do on Black.
Yeah.
So far, we want to work with more industries, but if there are other people working with other industries, let's support them.
Mm.
And yeah, we want to see more representation in stores. So if anyone else is supporting Black entrepreneurs, brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if there's anything we can do to support, great.
Yeah.
And that's how
yeah.
I see
yeah.
it.
It's almost where there's already the wheels are in motion elsewhere, how you kind of bring it all together, I guess, is what
yeah.
you're saying.
Or just make it. Sometimes, you know, you get bringing all together and everyone thinks, oh yeah, but what's your cut?
Yeah.
What's your angle? And actually, sometimes, like, there's no angle. Like,
yeah.
If you're doing stuff that we really believe in, let's just help you, and we won't, like, there's no cut,
mm-hmm.
there's no money. And yes, we need to make sure we can pay everyone's
yeah.
salaries. So I volunteer, so I don't get paid, but we have got people, you know, a few people on the payroll now.
Yeah.
We just need to see the progress happen. And sometimes I think it's when you try to bring people together, it starts to cause a bit of friction, because like, oh, what's the setup, what's the contract? And actually it's like, well, no, you're doing great things, can we just help you? Maybe we can make an introduction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
We can, you know, and that's how we want to work. And there's just a belief that enough money will come in at least to pay the bills. That's
yeah.
why I set up as non-profit.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
no one's going to make their millions out of this.
Yeah, yeah.
We take equity in the companies that that we help, but then all of the proceeds, if they ever become something,
yeah.
just get reinvested
back
yeah.
to running more programs or helping all the other initiatives.
That's
yeah.
amazing, man, because
yeah.
you're then giving the entrepreneurs the opportunity to help in the future as well.
Yeah.
Like, if it goes out, it's like they know that bit of equity is ring-marked for
they know
for
where
the future
it, they
growth.
They know where it's going, and that's been part of it, because a lot of these accelerators do take equity,
yeah.
understandably,
yeah.
because it's hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
You know, there are 5
yeah.
a.m., 5:30 Sunday morning conversations
yeah.
where I'm saying, no, you're in it with them, and
yeah.
sometimes you're shouting at them, they're saying you're in it and you're hustling with them,
yeah.
And that's the bit that sometimes goes missing, because people just assume it's so linear, it's so easy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to give you some money and you can follow a process.
Yeah.
But you're developing and helping them as characters and as individuals,
yeah, yeah,
as well
yeah,
as
yeah.
their brands. And
yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, what's also like that equity, and like I've had this conversation with so many people where it's like at the beginning that equity, there's more risk on you, because that equity means nothing really. It means something, sorry, but the value of it is to you is nothing right
yeah.
now. It's only if that brand goes on and makes it. So it's
yeah.
that, like, it's such an amazing conversation there, where it is, it's an equity driven piece, not a cash driven piece, because you could maybe have 15, 20, 30, however many brands
yeah.
in there, and one of them makes it. Therefore, that equity piece is only ever going to cash out on one brand, but you could have helped hundreds and hundreds of them.
And it's really, and there's two things we did, and we're still trying to work out the best model for it. So we said, if we can help you raise or introduce you to someone up to the point, like up to a certain limit, we will take 10% of that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't even come close to covering the cost of running the program.
Yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
then we've got a bunch of consultants, like the best consultants. We've got an amazing design agency called The Cabinet, who do work with Diageo and Coca-Cola.
Amazing.
And the work that they've done is fantastic, and they do it at an incredibly, like, a really good rate, but it costs money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But what we don't want is for a founder to put any money, cash in at the start, because some of them literally got zero. It's like minus one. I've seen some of the bank balance, minus £1.
Yeah.
You know, but their ideas are not, and their potential could go amiss if they don't get that help.
Yeah. I think it's amazing, man. And especially being in a position that you're in to actually make that change, i.e. like, you're a senior man in the industry, so you can go out to your Ricardos, to your Diageos, to your network and put your neck on the line and say, look, we can do something here, like rally together and actually make a real difference. It's incredibly inspirational.
Yeah, really, really is. And I guess coming back to what you were saying, I wonder, just, I guess, with the podcast kind of ethos behind it as well, of almost the nitty-gritty, you've kind of explained how it's not linear, it's not guaranteed, there's risk still within it. How do you kind of make sure that, yes, you are the support and the driving force to these entrepreneurs and the... I mean, you can see how passionate you are about it, just from talking to you about it, but from the sense of not putting the kind of responsibility 100% just on your two shoulders. Is that, do you find that difficult? Has it got better over time? Or is it, are there things that you do to...
I'm not going to pretend that I've got that sorted. It's really hard because you know how important it is to them. You're trying to make it as simple for them as possible. They've put quite a lot of trust in you. So while the equity thing is interesting, because while, yes, it's not cash-based and until there's something at the other end of it, like, oh, wow, but that's quite a deep... If you feel a deep sense of responsibility, and you kind of want this to all work, because you've got all these retailers on board, you've got all these advisors, and they're all amazing. You've got the MD of Diageo, who's helping, spending a lot of time with Tomoe. You know, and Tomoe's like, one day he's doing this job, the second, like literally the week later, he's meeting four buyers from Tesco. And you feel a deep sense of responsibility for them, because you've instigated something. And one thing I've learned is, it was an 18-week programme, and we've done it, we're just finishing our third one. So we've been going about 18 months altogether. And we've realised that we probably have to pause and just help the brands that we've already got to that point.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Innocent's like 23 years old. We still got challenges and we're still growing. So it doesn't ever stop.
Yeah.
So how do you create a community? How do you support them and nurture them so you don't just get, you know, a handful of tiny companies and everyone celebrates that? You want them to develop and grow and thrive. So we want to create a community. We get the support of young foodies and Foundervine and a guy called Andy Ayim who's coming on board, just to try and nurture them, because, again, I didn't think about it at the time, but 18 weeks is really going to help.
Yeah.
But in a sense, it just increases the stakes, and it means that you're on a higher ledge. And you just got to keep going. That's the thing. How do you make this sustainable? How do we just keep supporting them and they feel like they've got the network that they wouldn't readily have?
Yeah. I think that's amazing. And going back to when you started the conversation about this and how you wrote the blog and how you needed more, it's going back to, it's keeping those values the whole way through now and going, like, actually, this isn't about trying to, like, sort of throw out a PR message about how many thousands of people are helping. It's like, no, like, being, stopping now and focusing on nurturing what we've got to then reopen later is amazing, because it's not just a kind of, hey, we can help you, and then you're on your own now. It's like, actually, that whole process is, it's really, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I think it's wicked. And is there a way that any of our listeners can get involved or help or do, like, maybe not get involved on the day-to-day, but if there's anything that they can do to help with the education or anything like that, like...
I think so. I think what we're doing, we're actually going to do a 1st of July, all the brands that we've helped, plus the two or three that are already in the market, they're all going to come here, actually.
Oh, amazing. On Friday.
And we're just going to get them to meet each other and understand what the big things that we can help with.
Mm.
And then we can go to our networks, whether it's negotiation training, which I think a lot of them definitely need, or I don't know what those things are.
Yeah.
also just support the brands.
Yeah.
If you look on the Axel Instagram, all the brands and their stories, and you see them, follow them. You know, three of the brands we're involved with in some way were on the Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, really?
Oh, amazing.
So it was Asha was on it.
Bola. Oh my god!
I don't know if you watched.
I watched.
So I haven't watched it because I don't want like the TV editing.
Yeah.
To I don't know. I chose not to watch it. And Victoria from Sumo Snacks, who was not on the program,
she
but
won
someone
it,
else.
Didn't
really,
she?
Yeah. So, but she's someone that we'll bring into the community and try and support. So I think it's support the brands. Like,
yeah.
We're a non-profit, so if anyone ever wants to donate, brilliant. Because frankly, I want to just make sure people, like, we can pay the bills and do more of that stuff. But you just have to support the brands.
Yeah.
And you either buy the product, or if you've got I don't know, some kind of specific skill or capability, just contact us through the website. And we're working our way through, because it's not linear.
Yeah,
you can't just
say,
oh, that's exactly what everyone needs.
Yeah. Well, it's creating something from scratch, isn't it?
Yeah.
Getting it out there. And how amazing, man. That's wicked. And the Jamie Oliver program, I watched the first, like, 15 minutes of the first episode. Sorry, not Jamie Oliver,
Gordon
Ramsay.
Ramsay. Yeah.
And I watched, like, the first 15 minutes of the first episode, and Gordon Ramsay came in on a helicopter and jumped out into the sea, and I was like, that's been done.
Get
contestants to jump off the rocks and be like, I want to test how much hustle you have. Can you jump off a rock? I was like,
what has this got to do with me?
Yeah. Well, I think what you can guarantee is if anyone's got a brand and is even selling online, they've got hustle.
Yeah.
It's hard. Mm-hmm. That's always guaranteed that they've got hustle. Because it's so high risk.
Yeah.
And for very little reward until you get to a point.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Well, I think it's brilliant, man. And I think young foodies from a recruitment process are also doing some amazing things in the way that recruiting happens and sort of blank CVs and all that sort of stuff, where it's like it doesn't matter anything down from your education, from where you're from, all that sort of stuff. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
And how that process works is really changing. I mean, it's been a long old time coming, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's now, yeah. Man, well, as we, anything more before I sort of start to wrap up?
Not really. I just, for you as well, personally, Sam, I feel like, as Harry touched on, obviously, with the blog post that went out and everything in 2020 post George Floyd, and there was the momentum behind it then, you must feel proud that the momentum hasn't stopped, and that, to your point, the industry has had a diversity challenge, but you can see from the involvement that you've had with brands, retailers, etc., of corporate scale, that the appetite for change is there. So that must just be a really nice moment to actually have that, because obviously you've looked back, as you say, 17 years you didn't interview anybody who was black, and then looking forward, actually that kind of continuity piece that you were talking about, of it's not just doing a program to say that you've done a program and that you're going to hopefully, you know, have equity in the fantastic brand that makes 10 million quid in 3 years. It's not about that, it's about the sort of systemic change behind it. You must feel a good sense of pride in that.
Like any founder, you never, like, you can't let yourself
stop.
Because you're always looking around the corner for the next challenge. And thank you Kitty, and I feel it's great we've started something. I just don't feel we've even really started yet. And if I'm honest, I don't think every company is as serious as others. What's changed in the last 2 years? You could argue that there's a lot more talk about it, and yes, there is a tiny bit of improvement. But we've got such a long way to go. So I would say retailers and supply side alike, we've barely started yet. And it's a shame that it almost takes something to happen
for
the light to come back on. And everyone goes, the light's
come back on.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's get back to it.
Yeah.
So
I think
it's something that all of us, me included, can stay comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty comfortable. And that's the most dangerous bit. It's not necessarily the raw people on either end of the argument. It's the comfortable middle that can basically go to sleep at night and choose not to do anything and
actually still
live in that comfort. So I just want to keep working. We need to keep working out ways of keeping it front of mind.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the right end point is. I just know that we just got to keep making progress.
Keep going.
But that's the beauty of a a not profit, right?
Yeah.
Is that the end goal is around, like, well, there's never really going to be an end goal because it's continuously evolving and helping, and especially in food and drink, like something you just said there that really stuck with me, is it's really difficult because when you're sending in product to retailers, it's not necessarily until there's a meeting or an exchange that they would necessarily know what ethnicity anybody's from. So, like, that for it must be a real challenge there, because it must be slightly easier for the retailers to be like, well, like, we kind of do our best, but this is what we get sent in as brands, rather than actually going, as you're saying, they sleep well because we get sent a load of brands and we don't really look. Yeah. Whereas actually it's now like, we'll get up and look. Like,
Everyone has to work harder to look for difference. Like, everyone, whether it's brands or in our recruitment, like, it's, if you open a job up at Innocent, loads of people will apply. Mm. If you open a job at all these companies, or if a Tesco buyer says, I've got one space on shelf, or Waitrose, everyone applies.
Yeah.
But you're only going to get the same people.
Yeah.
So we're talking about you have to work harder to look for it. And we're not necessarily set up to do that. Some companies are much more specific.
Yeah.
But ultimately the hard thing about challenging brands and is the shopper or consumer will ultimately decide.
Yeah.
So what we always say is that sort is, yes, if you're black, and right now it's black, fine, you're in, but after that, I don't care about you being black.
That product has
to be a product that could scale in the UK.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be looked at through the eyes of the 60 million people that live here.
Yeah.
Not the 2.2% of the people.
Because
why would a retailer list something based on like a small fraction of people? So so that's the thing, we have to almost be even harder.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah. But that's amazing. That's where all the experts that you've got around you can take it, is it's a real platform to, and it goes back again to the values of, like, right the way back to your blog post. It's how do we do more? It's like, it's a genuine opportunity. It's not, again, it's not a PR movement, as you've spoken about, where it's like, actually, it's a platform to get the brands to the same level and if not better than the big corporate brands we have now.
Yeah.
Man, it's amazing talking to you, it really is.
Yeah.
This is really fun.
Yeah, really good. Yeah. Thank you, honestly, Sam, thanks so much for coming on. We've had an absolutely great conversation. We could carry on all day. But sadly I think we all have to give it a rest. But
absolutely.
Thanks so much for sharing all of that.
I think just sort of wrapping up, obviously, so we can so on Instagram they can find
so Silent Pete, PSALT.co, and you on there you'll just see all three parts of the business. There's a video that Gareth and I did just to talk about where it all came from. It's quite long, but you can, there's bits of that, and then you can then click through to all the various bits that we do. That's probably the best way to navigate it, and we're on LinkedIn and things like that.
Amazing. And we couldn't be sat in Fruit Towers HQ and not have a little bit about Innocent. I'm drinking the tropical defense now at the moment, and Kitty hates me. She's gonna hate me even more for saying this, but whenever we're together or whenever we go away, I always deliberately go to the shelf and pick up a naked smoothie just to
piss off.
I will never actually pay for a naked smoothie.
Oh,
I'll always come back to the Innocent.
You shoplift it.
I'm just taking their skews off and putting more Innocent on the shelf.
Yeah, you are.
I'm field sales dressed. But yeah, man, I guess kind of like a top line of how it's all going, the aspirations for the business.
Yeah,
like,
I'd love to. So I've been here just under a year, and I always feel like I timed it really well coming back into consumer goods. So I think we're just coming off the back of the Suez Canal, there's Brexit, there's Ukraine, there's, I was going to say spiraling up prices and you know, supply challenges like so many other companies have had. So that's been tough. So the setting and the context is hard for everyone.
Yeah.
In some cases, because of the transitions we're going through, it's been tough for us. What's really special, there's two things I think I'm so special, not just the office, but we do so much good stuff that we don't tell people about, because it's just too much to tell a consumer or too much to tell a retailer, because it's just a long list of things that we can be really proud that we do. So in terms of how we do business, you know, how we approach these things, I've never worked in a company that is so mindful of the impact of those things. And so that's really special. And also, there's something at the heart of Innocent that's just very human. And very kind. And again, I want to figure out how do we use that. We are, you know, we're fruit and veg in a bottle. And you know, so, and we need to be talking much more about the health benefits of fruit and veg. And yes, some people talk often about sugar, but we forget all the nutrients and the fiber and the potassium and everything else. So I just think this, I get really excited about how we could be more known for just being a naturally healthy brand. And also how we keep making sure that even in the hard times, and there's just no guarantee there's not going to be another something else happens. Something like, how many more hashtags can we live for? Like, there's no guarantee of that. I just want like, making sure that people do still choose Innocent and want to come here because the way they're treated and the fact that this is an environment where things can be tough but they can be bearable and still enjoyable. So yeah, that's what I would say. Internally, let people enjoy it and feel that they're always included. I want this place to be as diverse and but definitely people to be able to feel they can bring everything to work and not be judged for it. But I also want to, you know, want the country to know that, you know, if you want natural, healthy and sometimes functional, that's what Innocent's known for.
Amazing. I think it's such a an exciting time in the food and drink landscape at the moment because there's quite a big consumer shift as the younger generation are getting slightly older in terms of their education about what health means to them and what products they're going after. And you're seeing, certainly with HFSS on the food side, you're seeing big brands that have, like Mars, have come in and reformulated one of their bars and all that sort of stuff. And you're like, it's a really interesting sort of way to go. And what I love about Innocent is a lot of the times people will say, and I've said it myself previously, that corporates are kind of big boats and it's quite difficult to move it. But Innocent, from the second I stepped foot in the office when we came and did a sampling a few weeks ago, I was like, wow, like the way of working, the agility, the amount of stuff, the good stuff that you're saying that's going on. And also to your point that you walk in and the guy who welcomes you on the door is like, hey, how you doing? He's remembered your face. He's like, right the way from that second you enter the building, it's that Innocent wow factor. It's really special.
But I think the big oil tanker analogy is a really interesting one because, you know, as we get bigger, you know, we're not going to be as agile or as quick. But I think within it, we don't need that much turning.
No,
And that's the thing, we're already going in the right direction. So in terms of that swing, yes, we never say we're perfect. There's things that we're always working on and we're going to always talk about. We talk about things like plastics and our approach to it. We're always very open about it.
Yeah.
But there's not like loads of turning to happen with a big company thing. Oh, my goodness, we have to change everything. Well, we're already doing such great stuff, which is a nice place to start
from. It's amazing. It's a nice place to be. Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, dude, look, well, I mean, I normally now, because, like, we'd go, where can people find the brand?
Yeah. Right here.
I think everyone knows where to find the brand. But, look, thank you so much for coming and told it. Such a powerful story that you've got to tell, and it's great to be a little part of that and sort of help fly the flag. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Cheers, guys. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Untold. As always, we are so grateful that you give us a little bit of your time.
We really, really are. And as ever, please do give us some feedback. We love it. So any reviews, please subscribe, obviously, as well. It helps us with the old ratings position in the podcast, wherever you download them. But yeah, please do let us know what you thought of the episode. We love to hear what you guys think.
And as always, this episode is brought to you by The Savourist. We make lip-smackingly delicious savoury snacks that can be found at www.thesavourist.com or the.savourist on Instagram and TikTok. Ciao for now. See you next time.